T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome to Small Talk, a show about small business for small business. Here's your host, Mark S. Lee.
Good morning and welcome to Small Talk with Mark S. Lee. We are not in the studio today. We are broadcasting from the Mackinac Policy Conference up in Mackinac, Michigan for the Detroit Regional Chamber's annual Mackinac Policy Conference. And we're so pleased to be joining you, and we appreciate you listening down in the Motor City. And we have about 1,600 or 1,700 of our closest friends from representing Metro Detroit, addressing the key critical issues affecting Detroit and the metropolitan area, as well as the state. And so we're going to have a conversation with several business leaders here from across our region, and we're going to address some of the issues that might be affecting all of us, again, as part of this year's Mackinac Policy Conference. So sit back, relax, enjoy that nice hot cup of coffee, as I always like to say, and just enjoy the conversation with our very first guest, Ms. Angela Rogensee, and she's the Executive Director for PlayWorks Michigan, and she's been kind enough to join us for a few moments here on Small Talk with Mark Esley to talk about her organization, which is PlayWorks Michigan. And Angela, good morning, and thanks for joining me.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Good. And tell us briefly, before we get into the Mackinac Policy Conference conversation as well, talk to us briefly about PlayWorks Michigan.
Absolutely. PlayWorks Michigan is the leading organization leveraging the power of play to bring out the best in every kid. We use play as a tool to help children learn the life skills that they need in order to be successful. And we really believe that play is a basic human right, and every child should have access to it, both at school and out of school. And many children in our state are not afforded the opportunities to be able to play at school or in the community outside of the regular school day.
Yeah. And how long has PlayWorks Michigan been around?
PlayWorks launched its operations in Michigan in 2010.
So they're relatively new, within the last 10 years. So why are you attending the Mackinac Policy Conference? Why are you here?
Yeah, so the Mackinac Policy Conference is a great place, obviously education being a pillar this year, to really understand what is the pressing conversations around policy as it relates to K-12 education. It also is, as you mentioned, 16 of our closest friends are here.
Or 1,600 of our closest
friends. 1,600 of our closest friends. And so really connecting with business leaders and folks who help support our organization in a variety of ways, and making sure that they know the kind of work that we're doing, helping to educate folks and talk to folks that may not know the great work that we're doing around the state, but particularly in Metro Detroit.
And clearly this is the place to be. We get a chance to really, a much more relaxed environment, get a chance to get a lot of networking in and talking and shaking hands with key decision makers, quite frankly, outside of Detroit. I mean, in Detroit, everybody gets distracted. We all get distracted by going to the office and cell phones. And here you have a much more relaxed environment. Yes, good policy discussions are taking place, but it's also that opportunity to get a chance to sit down with people face-to-face and really in an uninterrupted environment, if you will, and just talk about what the issues and opportunities are for the organization.
Absolutely. Those conversations are really critical and do help move things forward. I think that's probably where so many brilliant ideas and creative partnerships come from, are those casual conversations here at the conference.
And as we talk about education being a pillar, you know, education has been on the agenda here for the last several years. How many years have you been coming?
This is my second.
Your second year. So it's good to see that education remains a top priority for our state and for our city and for our region, because clearly we need to have educated kids and healthy kids as we think about the state's future as well.
Absolutely. And I would agree that, you know, education continues to be something of a priority. We really want to focus on ensuring that children have opportunities, develop the soft skills that they need, the life skills, to ensure that they're a whole child, that not only can they read, write, and do all of the things that they need to be doing in school, but they also have the ability to cooperate, to solve conflicts, to be able to work on a team. All of these things that they learn through play that we often take for granted that children just learn automatically, but you really have to create the space for them to do that and prioritize it in a school day. And we really think it's critical, not only to public education, but to our democracy, frankly. Those are the skill sets that children are learning that allow them to engage in a robust debate about something that's, you know, heated without actually, you know, going into some type of, you know, altercation. And we see that on the playground. They start arguing about, you know, if the ball in or out, and it's an incredible opportunity and an opportunity to intervene and teach, you know, how do you work through that? So that as they get to be adults, we have great problem solvers and folks who have the skill sets they need to be successful.
So when it's administered correctly, what does this healthy play teach our kids? What is it? What are you hoping to achieve? What are some of the key deliverables when they play healthy, for
sure.
that better phrase?
So definitely children learn to self-regulate. They learn to cooperate. They learn empathy. They learn how to understand kindness and all of the things that you know, go into playing a game of kickball or basketball. They learn how to take turns. They learn that it's okay to not always win, that it sometimes it's better to just play.
Yeah.
And how important that is for children, especially girls who are dropping out of sports at 2 times the rate of boys. Just an opportunity to engage in recreation and have a good time is something that's really important and a valuable outcome to the work that we do. Beyond the educational outcomes, which are in Michigan, we regain 17 hours of instructional time as a result of our programming. Educators report regaining increases in physical activity, conflict resolution, disciplinary referrals go down, a variety of things that pose challenges in school days really are able to be resolved by having us as a part of their school community.
We are talking to Angela Rogensey, and she is the Executive Director for Playworks Michigan. And as she referenced earlier, we're at the Mackinac Policy Conference, but she's up here because education is one of the key pillars for this year's topic, for this year's agenda, as part of the agenda for the Detroit Regional Chamber. As we talk about our kids, the next generation is vital to our economic sustainability in terms of growing Michigan. There are certainly studies that talk about the correlation between access to recess and playing this thing called academic achievement. Talk to us about that. How is that going to help benefit them from a business perspective later in life? So let's make this correlation between academic achievement and also obviously being healthy as well.
So obviously we care a lot about children's physical well-being, but we really also care about their social and emotional well-being. So it is super important that children, when they go to school, feel safe and connected, that they want to go to school. If they're not there, if they're not engaged because perhaps they're being bullied or they're coming from a home where there's trauma or things happening that cause them to not be as engaged in their school curriculum, we really want to create a space where every child feels like they have the opportunity to connect with a caring adult. We want to make sure that every child has the opportunity to be physically active and move around and get the wiggles out. And all of that is you know, not directly correlated to academic outcomes, but help children learn better. And when we help children learn better and we create an environment where children can learn better, then ultimately they are there more often and they do better in school.
You know, and as you talk about school and later in life, we know that the challenges that our public school systems have had, not across just in Detroit, but across the state and across the country. So clearly, you know, this is a nice augmentation, if you will, in terms of providing the access to playing, access to healthy playing, which certainly, to your point, just benefits our young people in the longer term. And so as these schools have continued to cut back on various programs, this is a program that's very important, if you will, to help those kids make up that lost ground that we used to get when we were younger in school.
Yeah. Absolutely, 100%. We take for granted that there are these opportunities in the community. family sizes are smaller. Kids aren't allowed to go ride their bike for hours in the community in the way that you and I probably did. Mm-hmm. There's just fewer opportunities. If you can't afford to play intramural sports, you likely don't get enrolled or your parents can't take you there. And so there's fewer and fewer opportunities for children to sport sample, to get out and really play and engage with other kids. And so if we don't create those opportunities for them at school, then they're likely missing out on that. And to your point, it's an entire skill set that they need to develop, and they do it best through play. And so how do we help ensure that during the school day and at every opportunity we can, that they're able to do those, to play and to learn those skill sets?
Yeah, you're probably hearing some noise in the background. No, we're not in the studio. We're actually broadcasting remotely for the Mackinac Policy Conference. And I want to first of all say thank you to WWJ News Radio 950 for giving us the opportunity to broadcast from using their set. And as you know, we all share the same space back in Southfield. But we want to make sure that we acknowledge them, and you hear some noise in the background. So thank you very much. People kind of walking around and taking a break, and they're networking in the hallways here on Media Row. And we want to thank Angela Rogensee for joining us as we're talking about Playworks Michigan. You have been growing aggressively and expanding throughout Metro Detroit and statewide. Talk to us about your growth plans beyond Metro Detroit and the other parts of the state as well.
We have a goal in 2020 to reach 10% of the Michigan elementary school population.
And how many kids do we have in elementary school? Do you know?
I don't know.
That's okay.
Yep.
Okay.
We have, I think, 1,200 elementary schools in the state, but it's early,
forgive my math. That's all right.
We want to reach 10%, so we are aiming at partnering with schools, and to really accelerate our movement, we are trying to train and consult with as many school districts as possible so we can meet them where they're at, and we can help them with their grown-ups that are already there working with kids to ensure that they have our best practices, tips, tricks, and systems so that they can execute safe and healthy play at their school on their own. Our goal is to change public education. Our goal is not to become, you know, a large nonprofit that just continues to live into perpetuity. Our goal is to really solve for a critical problem in our public school system, and hopefully do that through building a movement where play just becomes something that no one would ever dream of taking away from children or cutting from a budget or limiting in any way. And that's currently not the reality for a number of our kids in the state.
So a question, just a point of clarification, I'll close a couple of minutes together, excuse me, as we talk about Playworks Michigan. Is this something where the program is actually taken into the school, or do parents sign up and they go to like an after-school program? Clarify that for us.
Yeah, all of our programming happens at school.
At school.
Throughout the school day and after school. So we go to them, and we ensure that recess happens. We work with teachers and classrooms to ensure that teachers are learning our skill sets and kids are learning in smaller groups. We run an after-school youth leadership program. We run intramural sports leagues, all of which happen predominantly at the school and throughout the school day, because that is where kids are at, and that's where we know they have to be. And so how can we make the biggest impact? And when we look at that, we definitely look at how do we maximize the time in the school day.
And I'm sure the parents enjoy it.
Sure, absolutely.
And the kids probably
educators
enjoy it as
do.
Well.
Mm-hmm. Educators do as well. I think 96% of our partners and folks that responded to our survey want us to return as partners. So we're really, really proud of the impact that we make in our schools and the impact that educators see on their kids and their school community.
Well, you have closing less than a minute or so. Anything else you want to say in closing, and how can people get more information about Playworks as well?
So folks can visit our website, playworks.org/Michigan. Follow any of our social channels, which you can find on our website. Sign up to learn more if you're a parent and would like to bring Playworks to your child's school. Submit an inquiry to come visit and learn a little bit more about the work that we're doing. And then, you know, sign up to come see our work in action. We love to bring people out to schools and to playgrounds and to help them see what we're doing. So I'd encourage anyone that wants to get involved to really go to our website and learn a little bit about our movement to bring play to every child in the state of Michigan.
Well, Angela Rogensee, Executive Director of Playworks Michigan, I want to thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule to spend a few minutes with us this morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure. There'll be more guests on this commercial break on Small Talk with Mark Esley from the Mackinac Policy Conference, being brought to you, of course, by the Detroit Regional Chamber. Good morning and welcome back to Small Talk with Marcus Lee. We're broadcasting from the Mackinac Policy Conference at the fabulous Grand Hotel and the beautiful island of Mackinac. It's just a wonderful event, 1,700 people representing the business community from across Metro Detroit converge for the annual Confab. I believe this is the 39th annual policy conference, and certainly they address certain issues affecting Metro Detroit, but also not just the city of Detroit and Detroit region, but the state of Michigan. And it's a wonderful event that people come here. They come to certainly navigate to the headwinds of change, if you will. They come and network and talk about business opportunities. A great opportunity to come up, and I really enjoy doing this each and every year with you. And so again, I'm not in the studio. We're up in Mackinac with a very special next guest, Miss Jessica Robinson, who is doing some great things here in the Detroit area, down in Detroit, because we're up in Mackinac. And she had a major announcement recently. But Jessica, good morning, and thanks for joining me.
Good to see you again, Mark.
Good to see you as well. And so talk to us about the organization that you are involved in. I know it's in the mobility space, but talk to us about the organization, what's going on.
Yep, so I lead the Michigan Mobility Institute, and this is actually our one-year anniversary, believe it or not, today. And we're focused on building a world-class educational center for the future of mobility in the city of Detroit. And our big announcement last week was our first educational partnership, and it's with Wayne State. And we couldn't be happier to have found that first partner to help us deliver on our vision. And so what we're out to achieve is bringing together all of the great industry partners and representatives that we have in the region alongside our great educational institutions to start to accelerate the pace of education for these new jobs in mobility. Because as we know, the auto sector is changing so quickly.
Mm-hmm. We talked about that in a previous segment with Russ from O'Keefe, and we talked about the talent gap that we have. And clearly, the part of that talent gap is because of the shift in the automotive industry, the skill sets that's required, the skill set that's needed in order to help our individuals get those jobs of the future.
That's right.
Now, your institute is really focused on helping retrain those individuals, provide those opportunities?
Yep, retraining. So folks retraining, that are in the industry today. They may have a degree, they may not, but they're experiencing this change with new technologies arriving. And so it could be in the engineering disciplines. We have so many electrical and mechanical engineers in the region. Increasingly, we're finding a need for computer science background in that space as well. So people that are in industry today, but young folks that might be considering a new career or where they want to go after high school or college. And so both of those actually meet the bigger need here, which is expanding and connecting the talent pipeline for these new jobs.
You know, and by the way, I can't believe it's been a year.
I can't either.
I remember we sat right there at that table.
That's right.
And I met you, I think, initially at the stables on the Tuesday evening, and we got into a brief conversation. You were in another role, and then I remember we sat at the table. That's been a year?
It's been a year, yeah, and it's been a quick ride, and we've been really pleasantly surprised at various points along the way about how much the region rallied behind something like this. There are lots of folks working on workforce development, great universities putting out top-notch engineers. But when we met, what we were really out to understand is what was the need from industry. And we heard very loud and clear that there was this gap. And so it's been a wild ride and a fast year. But in many ways, it feels absolutely right to be back here at Mackinac, where this year talent is, a major theme of the conference. And again, just tons of response and reception already here since last night.
So let's talk about that wild ride, though, because a lot of times people will start an organization and they want to come out on top. They want to kick it off May of last year or June of last year, and 12 months from now, they want to be sitting at the top. Talk to us about the peaks and valleys that you've had to experience going through the process, and then we'll talk about how you engaged Wayne State as part of the process.
Absolutely.
As well.
So I've been fortunate enough to be around great entrepreneurs for many years now, and it's been fun to be on the other side of the table and taking some of my own guidance as a mentor. But we have had a great set of people around us, including our advisory board. That was one of the very first things we did, was put together an advisory board of technical leaders who could really help us set the right direction in terms of, do we need a degree? Does it need to be in an engineering school, a business school, whatnot? So I'm not an engineer. I don't have that experience. And so I knew I needed that guidance. sites. One of the other unique things that we continue to be reminded of is many times an effort like this comes out of government initiative or a university or perhaps even an economic development organization. And in our case, this was a couple folks from industry saying, we see a gap and we think we bring something unique to the table here in terms of understanding where the industry is going. My business partner has invested in mobility startups for about 10 years now. And so he's seen what happens when you can't find great people to continue to grow those companies. I myself saw it coming from inside industry at a number of organizations, including Ford Smart Mobility most recently. And so that's been hard at times because we don't have the parent organization to provide some of the basic things. But again, the validation has been by being somewhat independent, we actually can focus on the bigger issue, which is closing that gap.
So one of the biggest things, one of the initial things that you did is formulate that board of advisors. Mm-hmm. And you're listening today, I want to reemphasize that point, because a lot of times as you're starting a business or you're growing a business, you think that you can do everything yourself.
Yes.
And you think you're a master of everything. The reality is you're not. And it's okay to surround yourself with people who are smarter than you, they have areas of expertise.
Absolutely.
Let's swallow our pride a little bit and rely on those people to help get us over the hump. Mm-hmm. So I heard you saying that the board of advisors is one of the very first things that you did. And what types of skill sets and operational backgrounds do you have on your board of advisors? Just a high level.
Yep. So some of the technical leaders, we're very fortunate. We have a guy, Carl Ignema, who ran the MIT Robotics Lab. He's a successful entrepreneur, most recently exited his company to Aptiv, which of course has a presence here in the region as well. We also have an advisor, a brilliant woman, who developed one of the landing systems for a Mars exploration rover. So when we think about mobility, it's not just here on the ground, but it's up in outer space as well. And then a local advisor, Allison Malik, who's the COO for May Mobility. She's actually speaking here at Mackinac this week. Tremendous champion for what you can do in the region when you're building a company, but also very vocal about the need for talent. And then we've also been very lucky, frankly, to have surrounded ourselves with advisors with basic business experience and acumen. So we have a great advisor for legal needs, and we actually have an accounting advisor as well. And I joke with her that I never would have thought I'd be so excited for our weekly check-ins with an accountant as I am with her, because their combined experience has really helped us set the right structure for the organization to make sure that we can deliver on our goals.
And that's what she's saying. You know, I mean, Jessica's very smart. I mean, she's very bright. She's the best of the best. But yeah, listen to the types of people she has on her board of advisors. I think that's what's the important part of this conversation is, surrounding yourself with people who can add value and expertise, because we don't have it. Our brains, we have maximum limitation, and we need help from others to get us over the hump. We're talking to Jessica Robinson, and she's with the Michigan Mobility Institute. She's the executive director.
That's right.
Executive director of the Michigan Mobility Institute. And we're talking about the changing dynamics of our region. And certainly, she's got an organization she's put together that's helping to focus on helping to retrain and individuals in that mobility space. Let's talk about the partnership with Wayne State University, and talk to us about how that relationship came along and came together, and what their role is going to be in conjunction with the Michigan Mobility Institute.
Absolutely. So one of the things that's been critical for our organization from the very beginning is a connection to and establishing a footprint in the city of Detroit. And that's for many reasons, including lifting up other people in the community with new job opportunities. Mm-hmm. And so Wayne State was one of several potential partners that we talked to, and really very quickly stood out as a school that got it.
Urban-based
yes.
university as well.
That's right. Based in the city, and their connection to, they're a top-tier research university, but also they're one of only a few that has been recognized for a connection to the community as well, and having both. And so when we sat down with the Dean of Engineering, Farshad Fatoui, really just immediately saw that he understood the potential of working together, the potential of building an institute together, and they they had already taken some steps to start to invest in building out their professor bench, if you will, folks that understand where this industry is going, and have already started to put some certificates in place in the graduate school. And so it frankly became a very easy conversation very quickly.
So are people, are students going to be taking classes, or what is the process exactly? What is the institute going to do?
Yep. So we still have some work to do there in terms of rolling up our sleeves. So actually in the next couple of weeks, we'll start to do that work in earnest. But the hope is, and the plan is, that you'll actually enroll at Wayne State University in new mobility programming. Our vision at the institute is to actually have a new Master of Mobility degree.
Good.
And so we're hopeful that that can come to fruition with Wayne State. So you'll be a Wayne State student. Can't enroll quite yet, but folks are actually emailing me now saying, when can I sign up for classes?
Good.
Which is really exciting.
So there's a need for it.
There's absolutely a need for it. And then the institute, we will continue to build out, hopefully, home for ourselves, focused on research and potentially bringing other partners to the table on the corporate or education side.
Is this relationship unique in the city, across the region? In other words, are there other institutes aligned with other institutions, or is this unique to your organization in Wayne State?
So the degree aspiration is absolutely unique. There are many Masters of Automotive Engineering programs now, but not focused on mobility. So that part is unique. I've had a chance now to talk to other leaders in positions like mine around the world. Most of the time, they have been spun out of the university.
Okay.
So there's a close tie from the beginning. And so we are perhaps unique in going at it this way. But I think what's not unique here is industry, multiple industry partners coming together to say, we need to solve this problem. And there is a history of that. In aerospace, for instance, that's how the Stanford engineering program stayed alive. After World War II, as industry said, we need to keep having aerospace engineers. So we're in a little bit of new territory, but again, good people all around us to help us figure out the right set to get this nonprofit going.
In closing here, as part of the policy conference, are people still being receptive to the message of what you're communicating?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's humbling sometimes when folks come up and say, you know, finally someone is tackling this piece of the puzzle. And so, you know, that's what I focus on now is that first student, when he or she signs up to enroll in one of these new degree programs, I want it to be the best in the world for him or her. And so that's what I'm focused on now. And I think there's a lot of people around us that continue to come out of the woodwork and want to be part of this effort.
And how can people get more information?
Yep. So we have a new website since the last time I talked to you.
Okay.
So it's MichiganMobilityInstitute.org. You can visit there, see the latest news, including our announcement with Wayne State, and there's a contact form. So if you want to get on the list for more information about courses as they become available, you can do that.
Jessica
too.
Robinson, thank you very much for coming in. We appreciate it for giving us the update. Congratulations
thank
for
you.
1 year.
I know.
And this major piece of news we just announced within the last couple of weeks.
Thank you so much. It's good to see you, Mark.
Absolutely. Then Jessica Robinson from the Michigan Mobility Institute. There will be more guests at this commercial break on Small Talk with Mark Esley from the Mackinac Policy Conference.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to Small Talk with Mark S. Lee. And we are not in the studio today. We are up in the spectacular up north at the Mackinac Policy Conference here in the beautiful Grand Hotel. So here's some noise in the background. And I don't have the comforts of the studio, but it's always nice to be out and about. And you see people milling around. And we're sitting here along a media row. And I'd like to thank WWJ News Radio 950 for allowing me to use their remote set, as we're having a great lineup of guests talking about the issues affecting Metro Detroit. We have 16 or 1700 of our closest friends here in the Motor City, from the Motor City, up here in the beautiful, beautiful Grand Hotel on Mackinac Island. And yes, the weather, for the first time in a few years, is really nice. We've always had cool weather and things like that, damp, but so far, so good. I'll take it. Our next guest is Mr. Russ Long. He's a partner and managing director for O'Keefe. It's an operational financial management consulting firm based out of Bloomfield Hills, Michigan, in the northern suburbs of Detroit. And it's so great, Russ Long, to have you. Thanks for joining me. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's so good to have you. Let me start with, as I'm asking every guest, what brings you to the Mackinac Policy Conference?
Well, just the variety of topics that are covered, and plus I'm here to promote Grow Michigan and O'Keefe. Grow Michigan is a fund that loans mezzanine lender to small businesses in Michigan, and I'm coming up here to, we're getting ready to start Grow Michigan 2. Mm-hmm. Grow Michigan 1 is winding down, so Grow Michigan 2, we're looking for investors, and there are plenty of opportunities to talk to people up here.
So when you say Grow Michigan, exactly, to our listeners who may not be aware of what Grow Michigan is, exactly what is Grow Michigan?
Grow Michigan is a $50 million lending fund, which is funded by 16 banks and the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The sole purpose is to create and protect jobs in Michigan.
Okay.
So
sorely needed, right?
Sorely needed. Sorely needed.
Absolutely. And each year, O'Keefe works with economists at Northwood University, and you have a middle market survey that's focused on engaging the sentiment and areas of interest to the business community. And you recently released your 2019 report. So what were some of the key findings? What were some of the key areas that were surveyed this year?
So we sent out a survey to over 5,000 middle market and private equity executives and the people who serve them, accountants, attorneys, consultants, to gauge their feel for what happened in 18 and what they think is going to happen in 19. And it was a significant participation, and over 84% of the people that were surveyed exceeded their expectations in 2018 and also exceeded their expectations for the first quarter of 19, which is a good sign. But one of the things that we noticed in the survey was over 80% expected an increase in their capital expenditures in 17, but for 19, they're only 44% expected to increase their capital spending going forward, which so is just a kind of an indicator
that there's a little gap there.
Yeah, so it's more of an indicator that that they're anticipating trouble going forward.
So we talk about the survey, but you mentioned about that little gap. But what about in terms of the economic growth in our region? Is it, you know, we're hearing some good things in terms of economic expansion in the first quarter of this year, expanded 3.2% versus last year. Right. But what are some of the, based on the survey, how are people feeling about the economic growth and other key factors as part of the survey?
Well, there is some concern. One of the concerns.
One you just referenced a minute
ago.
Yes.
And also, the one of the biggest concerns that was brought about was mentioned in the survey was labor. The labor situation, right? There was a survey I recently read about where there are actually more jobs than people trained to fill them, and that's a problem in this area. There's not enough labor. There's not enough people to fill these technologically advanced jobs going forward. And that's where one of the key factors in business is seeing a slowdown in the growth.
Is that? Let me ask you about that. And I think, you know, just anecdotally, I'm not an expert in the area. I'm just giving you information based on what I've read. Is that talent gap? We're hearing a lot about talent gap across Detroit, across the state of Michigan. Particularly within Detroit, we're the automotive capital of the world, historically a manufacturing city, and we built cars the old-fashioned way, right? You know, my brothers worked in the plants back in high school and college. I worked in a plant, but I didn't work on the line. I was a tour guide. I took the easy way out. But my point, though, is as we're talking about autonomous vehicles and mobility, is that part of the issue that we have? Is our city, our people in our region are not necessarily trained in that space that contribute to the overall talent gap?
That's correct. And that's one of the things that are being addressed here is the increased education and maybe earlier education to get the people trained properly for the right kind of jobs. It's no longer just a line worker. You have to have more training than than you used to.
Yeah, and it's also important that we continue to work with the universities, I guess, to
absolutely.
Help educate our young people and things like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
I also understand that one of the areas of concern is the political environment, certainly our current political environment. I'm not going to, this is a business show, but let's talk about the impact of the political environment on this survey. How are people feeling from a business perspective?
Well, from a business standpoint, the tariffs are scaring everybody. They don't know how that's going to affect, how long it's going to last, how it's going to affect their business going forward. And so there's a lot of concern. And along with the political unrest or challenges right now, it affects the economy going forward. And so there's a lot of concern over what's going on.
We are talking to Russ Long. He's a partner and managing director for O'Keefe, which is an operational financial management consulting firm in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan. We're here on site today. Is what I'm trying to say. We're at the Mackinac Policy Conference, Detroit Regional Chambers Mackinac Policy Conference, where 1,600 of our closest friends are here from the Motor City and beyond. And we're talking about issues affecting Detroit as well as the state of Michigan. We know that how Detroit goes, the state goes for the most part. 5 million people in the metropolitan area represents 50% of the population in the entire state of Michigan. So as we continue to think about our future, we're hearing Russ Long share with us a survey that the organization put out, and he's kind of recapping for some of the survey results and areas of concern that involve the labor market, the economic growth, some indicators. There might be some things we'll get to in a second that might be referencing the fact that our economic growth potentially nationally could be slowing down. There's a talent gap potentially, as we've been discussing as well. And lastly, we've been discussing about the political environment and its potential impact on the business climate here. Let's talk about this potential discussion. There's been a lot of discussion about how the economy might be slowing down later this year, maybe next year. You know, we don't have a crystal ball, but we can generally say an economic revival recovery lasts anywhere from 10 to 12 years. Right. And our last economic downturn was, 2008, right. And here we are in 2019. What are your thoughts on that potential recession?
Clearly, some of the facts that came out in the survey, the capital spending points toward slower economy. The when asked what the likelihood of a recession based on a scale of 1 to 10, for 2019, it's only 3.2, but for 2020, it's 5.5 was the average that we got on the responses of over 5,000 people.
Wow, so people are expecting potentially that number, I mean, basically almost doubled
from 19 to 20.
So there's another potential concern.
They're confident about 19, but anything past 2020, it gets a little sketchy.
Yeah, you know, and as we talk about this, we talk about the tariffs and the other things that you referenced earlier, clearly that I think people are probably feeling that little bit of uncertainty and anxiousness as well.
Absolutely.
You know, as we think about the future, let's say 2020, what does Michigan have to do to prepare itself for a potential recession if, in fact, that happens again?
Well, I'm not sure it can eliminate the possibility, but it just needs to be prepared for that. And a lot of it goes to education. It'll go back to education, which is a big part. The earlier education and the proper training for people to be in the new automotive industry. It's not like the old industry. It's a new industry, and so there's a lot of different training and more training required for the people in order to get those jobs and be properly trained.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, as we segue briefly into Grove, Michigan, I got to say, so I got a brand new car not too long ago, and I am convinced that my car is getting closer to that autonomous vehicle. And what I mean by that is, so now I get all these indicator lights. So if I veer off it too far into the left lane, it says, rest easy, you need to take a break, right? Or now, like somebody cut in front of me the other day in Detroit, in Metro Detroit, they cut across, and all of a sudden, red alert, potential crash ahead of you. I'm like, wow. You know, and as I was driving up here, Russ, to Mackinac, I was using the cruise control. I don't know if your car could do this or not. So as you, let's just say you set it for 70, the speed limit, 70 or 75. If the car in front of you, if you get too close, if they slow down, your car slows down automatically.
The new ones do. The old ones don't, unfortunately.
I have a 2019, so let me clarify that.
Right.
But my point, though, is that that's the next iteration as we think about the mobility and autonomous vehicles.
Yep.
And as I was driving, I kept thinking to myself, wow, am I ready for this?
Right.
Let's put on your other hat for a second and talk briefly about Grow Michigan. You're doing something in conjunction with MADC, this Grow Michigan, which is a gap financing fund that's had remarkable success in helping businesses, Michigan-based businesses, achieve their access to capital. We always know in surveys that access to capital amongst entrepreneurs and businesses always ranks at the top or near the top. Talk to us about that.
Absolutely. So Grow Michigan was started in 2012 with the goal to protect and create jobs in Michigan. And what we do is we work with senior lenders to provide that piece of capital that the senior lender can't quite get to. So he goes through his iteration. He falls a little bit short, anywhere from $500,000 to $5 million. Grow Michigan can fill that gap if the cash flow is there and the story's right. And generally, it's a short term. We can go interest only for the first year. It's cost effective for small to middle market businesses. And traditionally, historically for our fund, the loan only lasts for 3 years. It gets paid out either by cash flow or the senior lender. We're a little bit more expensive, but we're not as expensive as, say, a hard money lender. So it gives the opportunity for these businesses to either protect, create jobs, grow as needed, where they couldn't normally get that capital.
Yeah, you know, and again, as I referenced a moment ago, access to capital always, it remains a challenge for businesses, you know, as they think about growth, and as they think about starting a business, as they think about navigating different headwinds of change. So clearly that is this Grow Michigan Fund and is clearly helping businesses. How many businesses, again, have you assisted
so,
with Grow Michigan?
Grow Michigan 1, which, and I bring that up because it's winding down.
Yes.
We're getting ready to raise capital for Grow Michigan 2. Grow Michigan 1, we made 32 loans of over $57 million, which allowed the senior lenders to loan over $300 million to businesses in Michigan to create and protect jobs.
You know, and I think that's terrific. So as you're talking about any type of financing we get out there, a lot of times businesses will think of traditional financing, you know, going to the banks.
Right.
No disrespect to the banks at all.
No.
But there are other funding sources. That's why I'm glad you're here today, because you're also providing additional funding sources.
We generally work with the senior lenders. So the senior lender gets there. That's where most of our referrals come from. Senior lender goes in. They realize they can't quite get there for that small business. They'll contact us. We'll go in and see if we can't help.
Well, if people want more information in closing on O'Keefe, what is the website that they can go to?
It's O'Keefe LLC, OKEEFELLC.com.
That's O'Keefe, OKEEFELLC.com.
Right.
Russ Long, partner and managing director of O'Keefe, thank you very much for coming in and sharing the information. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. You're very welcome. There'll be more guests on Small Talk with Mark Essley. We're not in the studio in Southfield in the Motor City area. We are at the Mackinac Policy Conference broadcasting from the Great Grand Hotel. There'll be more guests at this commercial break on Small Talk with Mark Essley. Good morning and welcome back to Small Talk with Mark Essley. And we're broadcasting from the Mackinac Policy Conference at the beautiful Grand Hotel with 1,600, 1,700 of our closest friends. And that all coming together from Metro Detroit and beyond, converging and talking about the major business issues affecting our great city, our great region, as well as our great state, focusing on education and talent and other key pillars for this particular conference, which is held every year right after Memorial Day at the beautiful Grand Hotel, as I referenced. So I want to thank WWJ News Radio 950 for giving me access to their remote studios here on the island. And so therefore, you hear some noise in the background. And no, I am not in the studio this particular week. We have two very special guests joining us, Mr. Phil Weaver and also Mr. Steve Reagan. They're both with the Hope Network Foundation. And I want to welcome you both to Small Talk with Mark Essley. Phil, thank you.
Great. Honored to be here. A pleasure to talk to you and talk to your entire audience. I think some important things are happening.
Absolutely. And Steve, good to see you as well.
Yeah, it's always great to be back on your show, Mark.
Good, good. Now, tell us, Phil, about the Hope Network Foundation, where you're headquartered, and what are you primarily focused on?
Well, so it's our organization is across the state. So we serve all 84 counties in the state of Michigan. With mental health and mental health issues, behavior health, IDD, developmental disabilities. We also have programs for transportation and HUD housing. We have our own manufacturing site to help returning citizens get a job and come back. And we're headquartered in Grand Rapids right now, but we also have a headquarters in Pontiac and also in Flint because we're big. We have about 2,700 employees.
2,700.
Yeah, and one of the biggest things, issues that we're having right now, of course, is this auto no-fault law that was just passed. We have traumatic brain injury rehabilitation clinics, and this new bill would basically gut those clinics and not allow people to recover.
So the bill that the governor is talking about?
Yeah, okay. And it's interesting, the governor just visited us 2 weeks ago and saw some of the people we serve. So I hope she takes that into consideration when she makes a decision about this bill.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah,
restate that one more time for so people listen so they understand what that issue is. I think it's, you know, and we first saw the bill, and we saw the headlines, and we saw, obviously, you know, potential reductions in rates and things like that. And everybody's like, hallelujah, and things, but you're saying it potentially got what now?
Well, so the neural rehabilitation, which is spinal cord and traumatic brain injury programs across the state, we're recognized in the country as the national models, but we've been national models because of the kind of talent we've been able to recruit to the state of Michigan. This current bill in its current form will basically reduce that in the next 2 to 3 years from being the most talented state to losing that talent to other states. And we won't be able to continue on with some of the successful programs we have for recovery with traumatic brain injury. You know, when you're in a car accident, a massive catastrophic car accident, and you have a brain injury, it's not like a concussion. It's not anything like that. We get people that come to us, they can't barely breathe, they can't eat, they can't swallow, they can't get out of bed by themselves. And we make them whole and let them go back to their lives. Yeah. Well, that's going to go away under this, and people are going to be put in nursing homes. That's wrong for lots of reasons.
And Steve, you're the executive vice president over at Hope. Go ahead.
Well, and I'm based here in Detroit, and I think, like you, Mark, I think I pay way too much in auto insurance. So I think, like a lot of people, I was excited about the idea of lower auto insurance rates. But the irony is that in Detroit, we face a real burden because of the auto insurance rates, but we also are home to one of the most vulnerable populations in terms of what the outcome of these changes. If we remove the catastrophic coverage protections, many Detroiters don't have the kind of generous work-based insurance or private insurance or wealth that'll help them in this kind of situation, and that'll force many into Medicaid, or, you know, even into poverty. It's sort of ironic that we're both need the reduced auto rates, but what we need is a real solution that actually addresses the core problem.
You know, but we talk to Detroiters, they say the real problem is the high insurance rates. Yeah.
Well, a number of the Detroit legislators didn't agree with that.
That's the conundrum, I think.
Yeah.
But they're not talking about the legislators. They're talking about the residents of the city of Detroit. The people who live there, they'll say, well, my auto insurance rates are...
Absolutely.
Right. And I think that's probably where there's a gap in communication.
But there are solutions to that. And there are many solutions. So let's talk about it. There's nobody really opposed to a fee schedule, right? There's nobody should be opposed to having great fraud protection so that a person doesn't get taken advantage of, or an insurance company doesn't get taken advantage of, or a provider doesn't take advantage of. So there are some solutions out there that don't impact the long-term care of individuals that this current bill does. So as an example, in 2021, it reduces the fees that we are allowed to schedule. This is we're talking about physical therapists, occupational therapists, speech therapists. They want to pay us 55% of their normal rate. Well, if you're a speech therapist, are you going to get paid 55% of your normal rate, or are you going to go find someplace maybe out of state that you can get your full rate? So there's some of that that I worry about the consequences. I don't worry about trying to change things, because change is good.
Okay.
But we got to change things. By the way, so the only part of the insurance premium that's going to change that they're proposing is the PIP, which is the PIP, okay? That's only 40% of your bill. So let's say you save 35% off of 40%. Now you're talking a few hundred dollars that you're going to save. I understand insurance costs are hard, but let's start to address the real reasons. Most of it has to do with fraud. There's fraud happening in multiple communities that we need to help fix, and we're on board with all of that stuff.
Yeah, Steve, have you had a conversation yet with the governor? I know it was just recently announced, just a few days ago. Have you had the opportunity to sit down with her and sharing your concerns?
We've been talking to members of her staff, and I think, you know, our concern is, you know, we've been strong advocates for real reform, but I think what we see right now in the proposal is, you know, reduced coverage rather than real reform.
Right. So Hope Network is a nonprofit, right?
Right. Got it.
So do we have to make enough money to to reinvest, of course. So when you say nonprofit, it doesn't mean you make any money. But we're not making this outrageous sums of money the insurance companies are claiming. And we can show them. Open our books. Our books are open. We do a 990 form every year for everybody to see what we're doing. Sure. And things like that. This is not rocket science for us. But we are so passionate about the people we serve. We know how we help them get back their quality of life. We've had family members, young families. We just had a young lady come in, 26 years old. She was 8.5 weeks in intensive care. She came to our program. In fact, the governor met with her, by the way. She came to us. She couldn't eat, couldn't swallow, had to have a feeding tube. Couldn't get out of bed or go to the bathroom by herself. Now, guess what? 6 months later, she's in a walk and she's able to walk a little bit. She would have never had that opportunity underneath this new bill. We're about people. You know, we really are. And I think we have to come up with a solution that allows people to succeed in their lives.
This is a delighting conversation we have with Phil Weaver and also Steve Reagan with Hope Network Foundation. And out of Grand Rapids, Michigan, but certainly Steve is out of Detroit.
Right.
Nearly 3,000 employees, is that right?
It's almost 3,000.
Almost 3,000 statewide.
And about 300 of them based in the Detroit area.
Right.
Outstanding. So let's shift gears, because I think there's also another part, one of the pillars of this conversation of the conference here, Mackinac's education.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Hope, you're also involved in the educational component. Who wants to have a conversation? Steve, you want to take the lead on it?
Well, I'll just introduce this a little
Please.
Bit.
Okay.
We started a few years ago a really great program and called the Michigan Education Corps. And Phil can tell us a little bit more about the history. And I think to some people it was kind of a surprise because they thought of us perhaps mostly as focused on health. But I think the key is that we think about the health of the whole health of the individual and the community, and that led us to this program.
Yeah, so the program is designed to get kids to read at the third grade level by the time they get out of third grade, which is, you know, the new law is in effect, right?
Yeah, yeah.
This program has been announced in 17 states in the country. We took it from, it's a Minnesota program that we kind of basically asked if we could use it in the state of Michigan. We brought it in. Now we're in 70-plus schools. We're in 12 schools in Detroit now. This year we want to do more next year. We've been working with the superintendent, who is just unbelievably great. We're in all the Flynn elementary schools. We're looking at trying to get kids to be able to read at the third grade level. We also do preschool, pre-K classrooms. We do too. Our success rate has been 87% to get kids up to reading grade level. 87%.
Yeah, that's incredible.
That's a huge number. So if we can serve more schools, we're going to be able to do that and continue that. I look at this as really simply a preventative care. If a child can't read at the third grade, 75% of them don't graduate. What happens to those then? They end up in a place that's not with a great job, not with an opportunity for a career. If we can get them to read and get them an opportunity to graduate, it's preventative for the rest of our programs. You don't come in, you don't have substance abuse issues, you don't have behavioral health issues then. We really have an opportunity to change a lot of kids' lives, and we're happy to do
that. And as our state continues to go through this whole transformation, education is a part of it. And if we have kids who are not ready, educationally speaking, how are they going to be prepared for these new jobs that are coming down the pike in Detroit, for example?
Well, this is an especially serious problem in Detroit, where I think we're all very concerned about the new third grade reading proficiency requirement.
Right.
We know that Detroit public schools are stressed in terms of their budget and the demands that are placed on teachers. So what this program does, we employ AmeriCorps volunteers. They make a modest stipend, but they also get a chance to earn credits to pay off towards their college debt. So it ends up being a great experience. And we place a full-time interventionist in the classroom helping that teacher. So when there are students that are identified as falling behind, you've got teachers now that are dealing with a lot more students than they had when you and I went to school, and with a lot more societal problems, I think, in some of these communities than you and I faced. And they now have a full-time interventionist in the classroom, you know, to supplement what the teacher's doing. The other thing we're finding with this is that this is a great experience. A majority of our AmeriCorps volunteers who come into this program end up getting hired by the school district after their year of service.
Yeah.
So it actually is serving as a transition path to becoming a full-time teacher. And that's another problem that it addresses, because here in Southeast Michigan, we have a teacher shortage.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting when you think of education and how simple it should be for us to understand that that should be one of our top priorities in the state, and it hasn't been consistently. And this program goes with everything else we're investing in the Detroit area as our organization. I grew up in Detroit, so I'm from a Detroiter, and I want to try to grow the Hope Network programs, not only MEC, but other programs across Detroit, including kids with autism, our transportation programs. We have HUD housing programs. grow those so that people have a real opportunity to be independent and succeed. That's
well,
what we're doing.
I know we're running out of time, but I want to ask you very briefly, Phil, about, I think you're focused on autism as well.
Right.
Yeah, give us a brief overview of what you're doing to support that particular challenge as well.
So we started autism actually 2 years before the bill was passed in the legislature to make it mandatory for people health plans to cover it, because we saw the need was so great and growing. So we have several locations right now. We're looking at a location actually in the Detroit area finally to grow and to expand over there. I think you'll see that announcement in the next 3 months. That's exciting because we'll be able to serve more kids across the state. We have a tremendous success record with kids when you get them when they're young. Once a child becomes 10, 12, 13, 14, their chances of living an independent life without critical services before that go down. So we're concentrating on the young kids mostly, and we've had tremendous success.
There's a wait list right now for autism services in Southeast Michigan, and we need to address that. And with our planned expansion in Southeast Michigan, we'll make a dent in that.
And before we go off the air, Steve, I know you're relatively new to the organization. You having fun?
I'm having a great time. One of the things that's I think been a constant surprise is that we've actually been in Southeast Michigan for a long time. We've had a fairly significant presence, but we've been quiet and modest about it. And I think it's the time. There's some areas where we bring some really strong expertise, that like affordable housing development, where we're going to start doing a lot more in Southeast Michigan. So I think you'll see us on the program again soon.
Good. You're going to see more of us.
All right. Well, Phil and Steve, I want to thank you both for enlightening me. And this has been a very enlightening conversation for me as well. Thank you very much. This is why I enjoy doing the show and having special guests such as Phil Weaver and Steve Reagan, and just really enlightening me and our listeners in terms of what's going on. I wish you much continued success. Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark, for having
thank
us.
You.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Great time.
I want to thank you all for tuning in, and we will check you out next week on Small Talk with Mark Espy. Again, we will broadcast for the Mackinac Policy Conference. I do want to say in closing, thank you to WWJ News Radio 950 for giving me the opportunity to use their on-site remote location. And we want you all to go out and make it a great day and a great week. And we'll check you out next week on Small Talk with Mark Hesley.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.